Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, September 12th, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. Or if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Also, you can join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Also, you'll find an icon on the right-hand side of our website and also on our front page. Okay, we're going to take tonight's scripture reading, pick up where we left off last week. We're in the book of Romans, and we're reading, chapter 4 in the book of Romans, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 4. What shall we say then that Abraham our father, as pertaining to the flesh, hath found? For if Abraham were justified by works, he hath whereof to glory, but not before God. For what saith the Scripture? Abraham believed God, and it was counted unto him for righteousness. Now to him that worketh is the reward not reckoned of grace, but of debt. For to him that worketh not, but believeth on him that justifieth the ungodly, his faith is counted for righteousness. Even as David also describeth the blessedness of the man unto whom God imputeth righteousness without works, saying, Blessed are they whose iniquities are forgiven, and whose sins are covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord will not impute sin. Cometh this blessedness then upon the circumcision only, or upon the uncircumcision also? For we say that faith was reckoned to Abraham for righteousness. How was it then reckoned? When he was in circumcision or in uncircumcision? Not in circumcision, but in uncircumcision. And he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had, yet being uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all them that believe, though they be not circumcised, that righteousness might be imputed unto them also. And the father of circumcision, to them who are not of the circumcision only, but who also walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham, which he had, being yet uncircumcised. For the promise that he should be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. For if they which are of the law be heirs, faith is made void, and the promise made of none effect. Because the law worketh wrath. For where no law is, there is no transgression. Therefore it is of faith, that it might be by grace, to the end the promise might be sure to all the seed, not to that only which is of the law, but to that also which is of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. As it is written, I have made thee a father of many nations. Before him whom he believed, even God, who quickeneth the dead, and calleth those things which be not as though they were, who against hope believed in hope that he might become the father of many nations, according to that which was spoken, so shall thy seed be. And being not weak in faith, he considered not his own body now dead, when he was about 100 years old, neither yet the deadness of Sarah's womb. He staggered not at the promise of God through unbelief, but was strong in faith, giving glory to God, and being fully persuaded that what he had promised he was able also to perform. And therefore it was imputed to him for righteousness. Now it was not written for his sake alone that it was imputed to him, but for us also, to whom it shall be imputed, if we believe on him that raised up Jesus our Lord from the dead, who was delivered for our offenses, and was raised again for our justification.
Okay, let's see. Do we have any questions or any announcements, Jan, tonight?
Yes, we do, John. Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Do you know if there is any court cases where attorneys' standing is challenged, or anyone's standing is challenged, and then it must be decided before the case goes to the next proceeding?
Can you start reading it all over again? I'm sorry.
Well, it's written kind of that way, John. It says, do you know if there are any court cases where attorneys' standing is challenged, or anyone's standing is challenged, and then it must be decided before the case goes to the next proceeding?
Well, I'm not aware of any cases where an attorney's standing is challenged. Not that they necessarily have just standing. Remember, they're representing somebody. They're coming in on someone else's behalf. I'm trying to think if there was any cases particular. Yeah, I can't think of anything, so I'm not aware of any.
Okay. I'm having the sheriff's office return certified mail. So this is indicating this sheriff's office is not about the law. So what would be the next step? Getting traveling cases dismissed, or any suggestions you might have?
Yeah, but I'm not sure what that means when when they're not receiving a certified letter. The question becomes, and I'll tell you, there is a problem with a sheriff's office's addresses, and it happens also with the courts. You might get papers returned or a card returned or something of that nature if you're looking for a signature, only because they have a physical address and a mailing address, and they're not receiving anything at the mailing address, at the physical address, I mean. So that could be the problem and why it's returned. I can't fathom on why anything would be returned that's coming through for a signature at the sheriff's office. And do they say what kind of a case this is, or what it is that they're trying to accomplish with the sheriff?
Talks about getting traveling cases dismissed.
Well, it's not up to the sheriff to dismiss a traveling case. That's up to the court itself. I've tried numerous things over the years with traffic courts. I've written a paper, which I thought was a very good paper, and whenever I've gotten a ticket, I've always sent that paper in. And I would say half the time it goes in, I never hear back from that court again. Nothing. Zero. So I take that as, a win. On the other cases that have come in, I usually don't waste my time. I just pay the ticket and move on. Now, I have challenged a few times early on, and I use some of the ideas and procedures I've learned from other people online. But then I put together my own position and my own thoughts, my own papers. And the last ticket I have, I went to the court. I refused to acknowledge the jurisdiction. I let them know they didn't have jurisdiction. But I was very careful in my words, which, as a matter of fact, we were going to talk about tonight, our words. Words are powerful. Words have meaning. They being the enemy, the powers that be, the court system itself, the particularly the Bar Association, they have changed the meaning of words. It takes a very long time to change the meaning of a word that's in a dictionary, for instance, Black's Law or Bouvier's. And I'm not aware of many words, but I've seen some words that have been watered down when you go from one issued point in time, and then later on, like I have the second edition of Blacks, and I have the fourth edition of Blacks, and I know there's other editions after that, and the fourth edition is pretty good, but the editions after the fourth, I've seen some watered down meanings of things. Not that they've totally changed the meaning of words, but that's what has happened. For instance, let's take the word sovereign citizen, or the phrase, shall I say, two words, sovereign citizen. And, they have changed that meaning to cop killer or potential cop killer. If you are identified as a sovereign citizen by the police and they will come at you very, very cautiously and there's a good chance they may overreact. So we need to be very careful, of course, when we're stopped for a traffic ticket. I'm very polite with officers. I even thank them when they're finished. I just let them go. They're just doing their job, even though it's wrong. I'm not going to challenge them in the middle of the street. They can't make any decisions beyond what they are taught and told. So it's just a worthless argument and could put you in a dangerous situation. If you're going to make your argument, you make your argument in court, and you make it in a legal fashion, using the common law, using the United States Supreme Court, using everything you need to use that's available, even statutes, using the statutes against them. Maybe we'll discuss that a little later. Now, I did write a paper and put it into the book, Court Access in the Common Law. So if anybody's interested, they could purchase that book. It's a hardcover book. It's 550 pages, which is the max, maybe 549, as a matter of fact. But that's the maximum you can put in a hardcover book. But it's a large book. It's 8.5 by 11, so it's the size of your basic paper. And so there's a lot of information, and it's maxed out. I have more information that I didn't get in there. And I might do something like an attachment for it or something for some new things and some other things in the near future. But in that book, I lay out a plan or a process of filing the papers and even discussion of some part of that, the mindset that you might have to have when you go into a court. But you want to talk their language, and their language is equity and to some degree law, Of course, they're civil law, and they're not common law, but you can bring your court into a common law position, and you challenge their jurisdiction, which is the key, and that's where you win. And like I said, the last court case I went to, I challenged the jurisdiction, and that's how I won. I also made note of the fact that the clerk was in violation of the law by removing my papers from the court, which they do all the time here in my town. If you send papers in, they send it back. So I bring that to court with me, and I'll have copies of that also to serve also on to the prosecutor if they're there, and also to the judge. This is what I had sent in under certified letter, under certified mail, and the clerk returned it. That's a violation of the law. That's removing papers. That's a penalty of up to 2 years in jail. I let that go, and I don't push the issue. But the point is you make the point. It starts to get to that poor person, to question, what's really going on here, because you have law, you have footnotes that back up whatever it is that you're saying on the paper. So that's the key point in that kind of an issue. So challenging jurisdiction is the key. They don't have it. And the point, the main focus that you really have to think of is the fact that they are applying equity, which is they're applying traffic law. And you can, when you look on the paperwork, they'll give you the violation number in New York State, for instance, or in your state or whatever it is. There'll be a violation number. And that violation number will be listed under traffic law. It's TL. That's the code that they have here, T for traffic and L for law, traffic law. So TL. Which represents, of course, commercial activities, and I was not, operating a vehicle with any kind of a commercial activity, and that's the point you want to make. And that's where your argument begins in this jurisdiction. But there's a lot of other strategies, of course, as you go on, because there'll be a debate or an argument in the court if you want to make that argument. I've decided I'm not paying tickets anymore, so I'm going to argue. Any time I get a ticket, I'm going to argue it that way. I guess that's all I could say on that. But we're going to talk tonight a little bit about that idea, dealing with problems with the traffic and the dangers of dealing with a problem right there in the streets, giving the police officers a hard time. But with that, we'll get back to that shortly. Any other questions?
Yes. Are you still recommending the Ameriplan Dental Care Discount Program? The link on the website, or is not on the website, anywhere that can be found, please.
Yeah, I'm not involved with it anymore. I've got, full coverage on my medical and dental and so on. It's a very good program if anybody is interested in it. It's a discount program, and you can get great, great discounts if you're paying your own medical bills, dental bills, and especially, you know, other things like your pharmacy. So if you don't have a medical coverage, I would suggest to go online and look up Ameriplan. And there are other companies out there. I don't know that they're as good as Ameriplan. But anyway, you can Google it, and you can join directly without without anybody, representing you, but anybody sponsoring you. Okay, so you don't need a sponsor really to join. But if you do bring people in as a sponsor, it's a multi-level thing at the same time. So, you can make a few dollars if you really work at it. But it is work. Any of those multi-level programs, if it's a good one, it's work. So, all right, next question.
So are you going to put a link on the website or not?
No, just go to Ameriplan. Put Ameriplan in Google. No, we're not sponsoring anything like that at this point.
Okay.
So,
next question, John. You know how you are wanting to pool data from all of the COS. Have you ever thought of using a survey software? For example, SurveyMonkey.com. Allows you to create your own questionnaire and responses to evaluate. Afterwards, you can download the data to Excel, where you can turn the information into charts. If you need help, let me know. I do data and analytics as a hobby.
Okay. Send us your information to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll pass that over to John, and he is handling that part of our work here, and see if that might be something that might make things simpler for him, and see what's available in that software that we might be able to use. So, but send me your name. Make sure you put put it attention to John. Just send it to mail@National Liberty Alliance, attention John, and make sure you put your name and phone number in there so I can give you a call, and we'll see. Appreciate it.
Okay. What is the devolution you keep mentioning, and do you have any direct evidence that it's true?
Well, absolutely. If you go under today's issues and second one down, you click on devolution, there's videos here, information, lots of stuff in here. Devolution, if you look at the evidence, whatever Q has said and other people who are representing them in one form or another, or bringing issues to the news as time goes on and going back, you see the consistency. So you have to really follow along in order to see the consistency. Like anything else, truth becomes obvious after a while. It's consistent to begin with. It doesn't contradict itself. And there's no BS trying to explain, if there's a contradiction here, a contradiction there, and then they try to explain it away. Look, truth is self-evident. That is a fact. That is, as a matter of fact, that's a maxim of law. Truth is self-evident. It's just a matter of listening long enough to consider. And that's all it takes. And that's true with anything, in any kind of a subject matter you're pursuing. Just look for the consistency and look for its logic and look for its harmony with everything else. And after a while, you either see it or you don't. And if you don't, then you don't. But devolution to me is obvious because I've been following it for quite some time. And just a quick example, there are things said by Q going back in 2018, 2019, and so on, and you would think, well, he was talking about, well, he, it's not necessarily he, Q is military intelligence, and getting messages out and information ultimately to the patriots. And so those of us who are listening and trying to make sense of things and looking for the consistency, we get the messages at the appropriate time. But a lot of what Q has said on numerous occasions was that the future proves past. So the point is what what Q was writing back in 18 and 19 and so on really was focusing in more towards this year right here. And so anybody who's been following lately, in the past year particularly, you'll see that Q has been aware of and laying out the things happening actually this year now. And that's done with great consistency. So again, like anything else that's worth anything, you have to spend time and analyze it yourself and study it and become convinced of it. If people don't believe in Q, that's fine. You know, at the end of the day, when everything is said and done and devolution comes in its great play, which I believe is really at this point, we at the pinnacle. We're at that point where things are really starting to happen. And I just saw today, there's a total, I think if I recall, it may be more than this. I don't think it would be less than this. Maybe be a little conservative on the number. Over 350,000 indictments ready to be unfolded. And there is being talk of carpet bombing, the MOAB, the mother of all bombs, meaning being these indictments are going to start dropping and hitting the news hard. So it's going to be peppering through the news system. So I think that that's going to be happening very soon. That's what appears to be said. It definitely, in my opinion, my strong opinion, it definitely will be really hit hard before the end of this year. Well before December, but we'll see how things unfold. So I guess that's all I could say about that.
Okay. A couple of weeks ago, I volunteered to help with the Jointer initiative you have and was scheduled to meet, but it seems the meeting never came through. Can we get an update on that?
What was it? They wanted to help with the Jointer, or they have a Jointer in? What did they say?
I can clarify that for you, John, I guess. This fellow had volunteered, and I tried to reach him by phone and email and was never able to reach him. And the meeting was, I think we met on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Right.
After the Monday meeting.
Well, you know, we're going to be having some meetings coming up. We're putting paperwork together. We have about roughly... maybe roughly 300 people that have joined us, and I'm not sure on the number, definitely over 200. And we need to make contact with each one of those individuals. So we're working through all of the paperwork right now, listing up all of the joiners that we have, and we'll be updating the website as soon as we have that finished. And I think we're very close to having that finishing as far as listing all of the basic information onto spreadsheets, because that's what we're doing right now. And as we move that information onto spreadsheets, we'll be looking at the usernames that the individuals have given us when they, you know, came in with their joiners. And we'll be setting up email so that we can communicate directly with those individuals that have joiners. We will endeavor, our plan at this point, is to call each and every one of those people on the phone. We're not going to try more than maybe three times. I don't know. We'll have to discuss that and decide how many times we'll call. Sometimes people don't answer the phone or they don't return the calls. But we'll try to be very specific on what we're talking about, reminding them that they had put a joinder in with NLA and we're about to make a move with bonds on these cases. And we're also going to be making a move very soon on moving those cases as evidence, which has already been, a lot of them have already been served onto the courts as joinders, and of course we do have them listed up on our website. But we will be moving to make sure that all of those joinders are going to be filed as evidence in a court, again in a court case against the judiciary, which we had opened back, I think it's 2015 or 2016. I think it was 2016 when we opened the case up, and we filed a lot of papers since then. But now we're going to start pushing it. The time is ripe. It's about right time to do it. And by the time we finish our paperwork, I think there's going to be a lot of things happening at that point, which will really give us some leverage, plus a lot of new things we've learned, particularly working with these bonds. So we're going to have a lot of leverage on this. But as far as contacting people and the meetings we've had, trying to think if we recorded them. I have to look to see if we recorded those meetings. I don't think we did, because really basically we were just trying to get people's attention and get them ready to respond. So again, let me just say what we're going to be doing. We will be calling the people, I'm not sure, two or three times. After that, then we'll give up on them. We will have as much interest in their cases as they have in their own case. If they've pursued other means and they're pursuing something else and they want to handle it themselves, that's fine. We'll need to know that. If they don't respond, we'll presume they don't want us to work to try to get some kind of a settlement through bonds for them. We can't pursue a bond without their working with us, so they have to be attentive to what we're doing and attend all of our meetings at this point in time when we call for them. We will be emailing after we make the phone calls. We'll be contacting, communicating, strictly after that point with emails. And we will let them know when we're having a meeting for a discussion on certain points, what is required of them, and so on. Whatever information we have to, give to them, and they have to respond. So people that have joined us in with us need to be paying attention. They agreed when we worked with joined us that they would be taking our courses. We're going to continue to push that. Hopefully people are taking their courses, and if they haven't, they need to be doing that now. We also ask these people to come to our Monday night meetings, and if they don't come to the Monday night meetings, they should be downloading our meetings, because the meetings are downloaded. For those who don't know, you can find them above the welcome page, right here, the weekly call. You can click on that, and you'll be brought to a page where, of course, it gives the information on how to join with us. But all of our past Monday night meetings are here. Okay. We also, some meetings we record in video. Actually, we record all of them in video. But some of them we post up on Rumble, and then we also put them up on our website. For instance, you can, same page you can go to and click on Click Here for Monday Night Video Recordings. Okay, so the ones that I think is the most important, that we're teaching something or important message or something, we usually put them up. This one was for oath and bonds, another one for oath and bonds, the classical education, the Convention of States, the original intent of the Constitution, thing on Jefferson, stop calling us a democracy, interviewing candidates. So these are all very, very important issues. So whenever we have what I feel is an important issue, we do put the video up onto Rumble, and then we post it here. Now, I think there's maybe a few that's recently recorded. We did upload on Rumble, and I haven't put on this page yet, I think. I'm going to review that and make sure we have everything up to date. Tonight's program might be one that we will be putting up on Rumble, most likely. But we'll see how things go and if we get a good message out. So, okay, what's next?
I contacted my district coordinator, district number 7, and he said he stepped down from that position back in April. Who is the Texas coordinator for district number 7?
Now, are we aware of that step down, Jan?
Yes, we are. I know Ed has been working on trying to fill it. I talked to him last week about it.
Okay. Yeah, so John and Ed, I'll be talking with them hopefully this week. I got to make a call to John. And I'll pull Ed in on that, and between the two of them, we'll figure out who's doing. Do you know who's covering 7 at this point?
I assume that it's Ed, because he was aware of it and looking for a replacement.
Okay, let's see if we have. Let me see if we made any changes. I don't know if Terry updated anything, but let me go to the directory and see. Okay, 7. Okay, it was Steven. So Ed, if you want to call Ed, this should be Ed in District 2, and what's he temporarily handling District 7 also?
I believe. I don't know if he actually volunteered or not, but he was...
All right, well, they can call Ed, and maybe Ed can refer him to someone or assist them. We definitely... Look, if anybody wants to volunteer, it's important that we get some help here. So anybody that wants to volunteer as a district coordinator, You know, we need minimum 10 district coordinators, but we're much better with 20 or 30 of them. We should have two or three or more coordinators in each district. As time goes on, we expect that we would have that. We should have at least at some point in time when things are really starting to move and we've got a lot of committees of safety started and moving along, then we should at that point have at least 50, one for each state. And some states which are big, like Texas, we'd want to get two or three or more. But we'd get two or more of any state because the more people assisting, you know, then the better things is. The more hands, the lighter the load, you know. So, but again, anybody wants to volunteer to assist us on a national level, either as becoming a district coordinator or other things, you know, just send us an email to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org and let's talk about it. Now, there is a, there is another page, district coordinators page. Yeah, we have what's called the district coordinators page. You can click on that. It's under Start a Committee of Safety. Come down to the bottom, and this is the district coordinators page. And so we're looking for help, people who want to join the team, so to speak. And again, not just in that position. You know, we're doing research and just doing a lot of things. And here we list out some of the basic positions that we need, and we need representatives to help us connect for interviews and maybe with individuals trying to find money, because we can always use money. We, matter of fact, we're coming up to the point where we're going to be doing a lot of paperwork and a lot of court filings, and we're going to need a lot of money, a lot of funding for this. So, matter of fact, let me take the moment here to ask for people that maybe could give us some donations for that purpose. And all you have to do is go up to our donation pay, tab up here on the top right side, click on the donate now, and whatever you can give to help us with that. If you're not a member, it doesn't cost anything to be a member, but if you are a premier member or you'd like to be a premier member, that's someone who gives $5 a month or more. If you can help us out that way, that'd be good too. So, you know, right now we're barely making things through, but my book is, you know, really coming along a little bit, so that's really helping to kind of fill in the gaps of where our needs are, financially speaking. But I'm not making enough for that to really fund all the things we have to do for the courts that are coming up. So, again, you know, anybody that can help us, we'd appreciate it. But, you know, in this page you can read what NLA's goals are, what our positions are, what the district coordinator's duties are, and what is required of all NLA leadership. Okay, we need someone. Right now, we don't have anyone working off Facebook. We do have someone. I don't know how active they are on Facebook. We haven't seen them around in a while, but we do need someone to help with Facebook. We have someone who volunteered recently, and I need to get back to that person concerning what's it called, Telegram, I think it's called, and any other social place that we can try to get the word out and information. And we need people, again, one of the biggest things I'd like to find is someone who can represent us to go out and get interviews, and also to find leads for people, you know, with deep pockets and go out to approach them to support our endeavor to save the Republic. Let's see. We have given information on meetings, agenda, national coordinators, coordinators meetings. And then we've had some meetings. The one on the 6th, that would be June 6th, district meeting was an audio meeting. June 22nd was an audio. We didn't have any video on that. And then we had our last audio on August 2nd. That was, that is also an audio and in video. So, you know, you can, anybody that wants to join up, you should up, you know, really go through all this stuff and get familiar with what we're trying to do and what we spoke about on the meetings. But there's a lot we have to do. One of the things I've been thinking about a lot, and as a matter of fact, I was working on it tonight a little bit, you know, kind of brainstorming it and making a few notes and going through a lot of books that I have. and that is to put together a proper curriculum for our children in school. I saw a video which I downloaded, and I'm going to post up on Rumble and put it up on our website, and concerning our education, concern for education for our children. And it was quite long. I think it was about 50 minutes long. And it was question after question after question to high school students and college students. And they were asking them questions about the United States, about who we are as a people, about who the first president was. I mean, questions that the most simplest questions that everyone that's an American should know. And it was very depressing, very, very depressing. I was so depressed by it that I don't think it was a 50-minute video. I don't think I even passed the 20-minute mark. I just couldn't go on no more because it just depressed me too much to hear how bad things are in school. Now, it really didn't surprise me because, you know, I've been following my nephew in school for the past, I don't know, 6 or 8 years or so, and seeing the things that they teach him and the lack of books that don't exist and the activities that they get involved with in school, which is political. And it's really disgusting. I just want to throw up. I'm thankful that I've homeschooled our children. So, but the mess that schools are, they're not teaching our children anything. So anyway, you know, I've been thinking about this, doing something with textbooks, and I'm starting to put a plan together. And that's going to be my next big endeavor. I mean, we're working on a lot of things, so we've got a lot of big things going on. But on the side, I want to try to find some time to start planning and putting together a curriculum for children from first to ninth grade. I don't believe that there's a necessity for schooling anything beyond the ninth grade. I believe solidly in my heart that anything and everything we need to teach our children up to a college-level education, including a college-level education, can be taught in 9 years. That I truly believe that. You know, children, I believe that because I'd send my child, my son to a Christian school, and he started off in the kindergarten and went right through up to third grade, which we pulled him out to do homeschooling because we were homeschooling our daughter. But in any event, he was reading at an eighth grade level by the time he was in second grade. He was already giving speeches, singing, or doing anything on a stage. You know, all these children are, okay? And so every child is really capable of learning a lot better if we deliver a proper education to them, an exciting education, one that's interesting and one that is factual and one that is empowering. And finding the children with certain deficit and assisting them in different ways. And I have a lot of ideas about that, too, which I might write something up on that. But again, we need to bring our children a proper education. They have worked very diligently to destroy our republic, and they have destroyed the minds of our children. They don't even know what the First Amendment said. They don't know what the Bill of Rights is. They don't know who the first president is. They couldn't even find the United States on a map. That's how bad it is. It's really, really sickening on how bad and how much we've let this go. People are not paying attention. And until we start paying attention, get our committees of safety going, and start taking control of our schools within our local districts, meaning within our counties, our towns within our counties, the cities and so on, the villages all within our counties, getting these schools to give a proper education and demanding it, requiring it. And I have a lot of ideas and plans on how we can accomplish that goal. But it takes the people to do it. I can't do it. But I, with thousands of others, can do it. So I'll put a plan together on that, and of course we can then brainstorm that plan and add to or take away accordingly, and people do what they want anyway. But the key thing is let's get a good education to our children. All right, next question.
I went to the Texas link on NLA, and it doesn't have much activity on it except back in 2014. Having to come to the site every single time we want to check out conversation can quickly become unmotivating and loss of interest. Is there a group chat that NLA has on some social media site to keep people really engaged, preferably in Texas, but open to other states?
Well, I'm looking at Texas, and it is quite depressing. They have 753 members, and yet they only have one committee of safety. This one here with with Daryl is an error, and I started correcting. He's from Tennessee. He showed up in New York also, and he's now showing up in Texas, and I got to go through to see where else he's showing up. So there's an error in on his page, and I just got to go fix that error. But it is depressing. We only have one. Last time I looked, and so I'm going to be having a meeting with the leadership. Maybe this week I'm going to try to do something. And try to discover, get the reports going to discover how many committees of safety we actually have. And then I'll give a report here on a Monday night on how many committees of safety we have. I might give it by numbers, by state. You know, we just 10 in this state, 6 in that state, so on and so forth. And, you know, we're gathering a lot of information on what is the how far they have processed along in the committees of safety, you know, whether they've actually had their first meeting yet, if they're on the second or third meeting, have they come to the point where they got all the resolutions done, you know, and all the paperwork, have they made contact with the sheriff yet, how did that go out, and so on and so forth. So we're going to start working on statistics on that and start giving a report. Hopefully we'll be able to give a report every Monday or at least once a month. I don't know. We'll see how things work. But we are looking for reports to come through to our leaders on these district leaders, which is John and Ed. And they will be reporting to me, collecting all of the information from the others. And then either myself or John or Ed will give a report from time to time. I can tell you that I did check in some months ago. Went through every state to see how many we had, and we did have at that point 120 committees of safety in process. So that's nice. That's good. It's a beginning. It's not enough. We need to get the word out. We need people to get more active. And maybe tonight's discussion may be answering some of the problems why we don't have that many committees of safety going, but we'll see what happens with that. All right. Next question.
That's all, John. I don't have any more for you.
Okay. All right. All right. Anyway, that person, maybe they can get their name up there and start communicating, and we can assist them in any way we can to help them get committees of safety going. I'm planning on and look at anybody who is really involved in these what we're doing here and starts to get educated and well versed in what we're doing. They've read all the handbooks, which will teach them how to do all these things. But, you know, sometimes, you know, and this is how we did this when we went to every county, we had people who became very active and became very involved. And we had some people who were traveling state to state. We had some people just traveling their own state. I myself traveled with Gerard. We traveled to our state just to get the word out concerning the administration for the juries and to have people get involved in order to bring forward the unified United States common law grand jury. And so now it's time to do the same thing for the committees of safety. And I will be putting myself out there to go out and give seminars in different counties throughout my state here in New York to assist in any way. And I'm sure we'll find a couple of people along the way that would like to do what I'm doing and do the same thing. And, you know, two people can do a lot more work, three people can do more work, and so on and so forth, and others in other states. I also am considering going through Connecticut, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and maybe some of the states up in the New England area to go out and give seminars. But we put together a lot of things to make the seminars very easy. You know, we've laid out a plan for a seminar. Matter of fact, the very seminar we have on our welcome page, which is one we had done live here on our meeting here, we put together a seminar, and this is pretty much how the seminar works right here. If you listen to this video, it's a 3.5, so it's a 4-hour video. You can come back and, you know, watch it in sections. But when you do your first meeting, your seminar, you're inviting a lot of people, and you're investing a lot into it, and you want to give the whole picture to the people. So it should be done on a Saturday. I prefer a Saturday over a Sunday, but I guess you could do it on a Sunday also. It definitely should be done on a weekend. And it should be done during the day, maybe at noontime. And it should be at least 3 hours long. I think 2.5 to 3 hours. to really give the whole picture. So there's quite a few different videos involved here and PowerPoints. We also give the PowerPoints that can be done live. They don't have to use the PowerPoint that we turned into a video, or they can use the one they turned into a video. But it's important to have conversation after each one of these different sections of videos. And again, the details of all this and how to do everything is found under Starter Committee of Safety, and you come down to Handbooks and Tools. Okay, and we did write a book. It gives you step-by-step everything you need. We have the Organizing Handbook, the Committee of Safety Organizing Handbook. We also have the Committee of Safety Committeeman Handbook, which is part of the Committee of Safety, of course. We have an example of a Committee of Safety resolution. We have the framework. We expect that people will use the entire form that we put together, which is a framework, and then build on that. Okay. And of course, there's a lot of other books here that will assist in many different ways and give more information, understanding, and a better mindset. Also, you know, one of the main things and the focus of the Committee of Safety, as soon as they get started, is start working on their charter. So they have a charter to create. They have a resolutions to set forward, and resolutions can always be added to as time goes on, of course. But once you get to the point where your charter is ready, your resolutions are done, you've formed enough at that point, you probably have 20, maybe 30 people, maybe more already involved. You have your seal. We talk about getting a seal. You should have a seal. And then that's when you approach the sheriff. And, you know, we put together a package that should be given to the sheriff along with a copy of the book, Government by Consent, which is gifted to them by the people. And so we have a plan on how to approach the sheriff. You know, first minute, five-minute meeting, no more. And given the information on who you are as a people, you have to have already done your charter and your resolution. You've been organized with your seal on it and put it together in a nice form. We laid all this out in the book, by the way. And then once you have your five-minute meeting with the sheriff and you give them all the information and he's got the book and he's reading the book, then you book him for a meeting maybe 30 days or so down the line, and you have him come to your meeting where the entire Committee of Safety can then talk with him. There should only be one person presenting the questions. That should all be discussed beforehand and agreed upon so that we don't overwhelm them. And maybe the last period of time, I don't know if you want, people could do whatever they want, and they can let just any question come up out of the audience, so to speak. Meetings should be probably about an hour and a half to 2 hours long, roughly speaking. People can do whatever they want with that. Should be at least once a month. In the beginning, they may have more than that in order to get escalated. Or a lot of, you know, you're building committees inside the Committee of Safety, so there's lots of committees that have to be developed. And all these committees throughout the month should be working on things concerning their committee. For instance, a committee of education eventually has to be created, and you have to start working on that, visiting schools, you know. And you don't have to invest a lot of time, maybe a couple hours a month, into bringing your information and bringing your report back to the full committee of what that committee is doing, and so on and so forth. You know, you got the committee of correspondence, which is connecting with county to county, and even county to county within different states, and also communicating with National Liberty Alliance. And National Liberty Alliance does not get involved in any way, shape, or form of telling anybody what to do or how to do it. We just lay out all the information, give the suggested ideas, the framework of everything, give them a proper education. We communicate with them and set up communications, organization, and then people get to work. You know, personally, I'll be involved in my own county Committee of Safety, not necessarily in a leadership level, but I'll give my expertise in any way I can to that. But nevertheless, I will be partaking just like anyone else and give my opinions and press my desires and thoughts and agreements with the rest of the committee. But as far as national, there is no national leadership in dictating to anyone anything. Every committee has said this is what grassroots is all about. It's up to the people. We just need to educate them. That's what we need to do. And then we have to warn them of certain dangers, which we're going to do tonight. I know I spent a lot of time here already, but nevertheless, I'm going to take the next 20 minutes or so talking and laying out a problem that exists and has existed since we started. But anyway, with that, we have no other announcements or anything, right, Jan? And you're talking to yourself if you're talking.
No other announcements, Sean.
Okay. All right. Tonight I'm going to focus on something. We're kind of working on a situation, and it's been laying around for a very long time, which I'll talk a little bit about that after these videos. I'm going to play two short videos. One is about 2 or 3 minutes long, and it is a video by Sheriff Mack. Okay. Right after that, I'm going to play a second video. That video is about 11 minutes long. It's a production from the Southern Poverty Law Center. They produced this video. It's a very, very well done video. Very, very professional. Very convincing. And I want to talk a little bit about that after the video plays, and maybe people will be interested in talking a little more. But let's do that, and we'll take it from there. So, first one is going to be on the Southern Poverty. No. First one is going to be the one with Sheriff Mack. All right. Let's do that first.
What I see today, when there's another YouTube video about a police officer tasing a 72-year-old woman, and he's twice her size, that makes me convinced that somebody is in the wrong line of work. And that we have forgotten what we are here for. We have forgotten that we're here to serve and protect. If you put those two together, the constitutional oath with our duty as peace officers, then you won't see these stupid videos on YouTube anymore. How ridiculous can we be? I, for one, I won't watch anymore. I'm not going to watch my country die and sit back and say, why doesn't somebody do something? Why doesn't somebody stop that? Oh, I know, let's make a new law. There ought to be a law against that. There already is. Every abuse that you see going on today is a violation of the supreme law of the land. And we are here today with honorable men and women who know and understand our duty to do, to act, to make a difference, to change.
Okay, and for those, let me think a minute. Well, I'll talk after we play the next video. The next video, again, is done by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And, again, it's a very well put together, very professional, and very frightening. Okay, I know what I wanted to say before this video starts. Just for those people who are coming in by phones, we have video going on. We share a desktop, so if you're coming in on a phone and you're not seeing this, you can come in. We have phone apps, and we also have a way to join us through your browser. There's numerous ways to join us. There's also, you can come on and come in and click on an app that is a short-term app that just opens right up, and you can come in that way and dial in on a phone and get through it that way. But again, you want to be able to see the video. Often it's important. This video will be posted up on Rumble. Probably I'll try to do it tomorrow or something. But it will be part of what our, in our video, with the rest of our videos, our Monday night videos. Again, we don't put every video on Monday night up, but the ones that really we have something to share, maybe visually, and that's important, we'll be posting them. Okay, but let's get back to this video here.
May the 20th, 2010 started out like any other day. Two veterans of our West Memphis, Arkansas police departments, Bill Evans and Brandon Powdert, were patrolling the interstate as part of the department's drug and addiction team, something they loved to do. They became involved in what seemed to be a routine traffic stop, though I've always warned my officers there is no such thing. But really, how much more routine can you get than pulling over a father and son in what looked like a church bus? My men didn't realize who or what they were dealing with. Neither officer made it home. And one of them was my son. I'm Bob Powdert, Chief of the West Memphis Police Department. My officers, Bill and my son, Brandon, didn't realize that there are people at war with this country that are not international terrorists. They are seemingly ordinary people, just like you and me, but they don't recognize the federal government's authority to impose laws or taxes on them. They're known as sovereign citizens. Their beliefs may sound so out there that they appear comical or crazy, but don't discount or ignore these people, because they are willing to kill and be killed for these beliefs. We as law enforcement officers need to recognize this very real threat so we can protect ourselves. And maybe if Brandon and Bill had been able to recognize the warning signs of sovereign beliefs, they'd be alive today.
In 1995, 168 men, women, and children were killed in the worst domestic terrorist attack on American soil in our nation's history. Aimed at the federal government and law enforcement, the bombing in Oklahoma City was the horrific symbol of the wave of anti-government sentiment that swept across the country in the 1990s. I'm retired ATF Special Agent in Charge, James Cavanaugh. I spent more than 30 years with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, and I was there at the beginning of the so-called Patriot Movement. I watched in 1992 as the standoff between law enforcement and a white separatist, Randy Weaver, in Ruby Ridge, Idaho, ended with the deaths of a federal marshal and Weaver's wife and son. I was there in the shootout the next year when David Koresh and more than 70 of his followers, along with four ATF agents, died in a fiery siege near Waco, Texas. What we didn't understand at first was that these events were a catalyst for the growth of a radical anti-government movement, a catalyst for the birth of armed militias. At its height, there were more than 800 of these anti-government groups throughout the country. Some were part of what is called the sovereign citizen movement. They believe the government has no right to tax or impose laws on them. Following law enforcement crackdowns after Oklahoma City, many anti-government groups disappeared. But the threat from hardcore elements of the radical right continued to simmer. In fact, between the Oklahoma City bombing and the recent West Memphis shootings, approximately 30 law enforcement officers lost their lives to homegrown extremists. Two officers were killed in Abbeville, South Carolina in 2003, for example, by extremists who did not believe the government had any right to use a tiny portion of their land to widen the public road. Today, the threat of radical right violence against police officers has escalated because the radical anti-government movement has swelled once again. Jerry and Joe Kane, the father and son who were involved in the murders of the two officers in West Memphis, traveled around the country giving seminars on how to supposedly circumvent the legal system.
So what we're after here is not fighting, it's conquering.
Right.
I don't want to have to kill anybody. But if they keep messing with me, that's what it's going to have to come out. That's what it's going to come down to. I'm going to have to kill, and if I have to kill one, then I'm not going to be able to stop. I just know it. I mean, I have an addiction.
Along with physical confrontations, sovereigns also practice a form of harassment and intimidation, often referred to as paper terrorism. They file bogus claims or liens against officers, prosecutors, or judges that can be difficult to get removed from court records. In 2010 alone, sovereign citizens have filed liens, cease and desist orders, and documents called letters of marque, or truth affidavits, against officers and agencies across the country. The following are some indicators that you as an officer need to be aware of to protect yourself. They are signs that the person you've encountered considers himself to be a sovereign citizen who is immune from the law. The first thing that any officer notices at a traffic stop is the vehicle's license plate. If you try to call in many sovereign plates, you'll find no record of them, and for good reason. They're either homemade or professionally produced fakes. They may display the names of strange nations, embassies, or tribes. They may refer to the Uniform Commercial Code or the Constitution. Bumper stickers are another easily visible sign of sovereign beliefs. One that reads Posse Comitatus, which is Latin for power or force of the county, means the driver believes county officials, such as sheriffs, are the highest level of law enforcement, and that the federal government and its officers don't have any legal authority. Stickers such as I am an American national, or not subject to corporate federal or corporate state jurisdiction, are signs that the vehicle's occupants are part of the radical anti-government movement. When asked for their driver's license, vehicle registration, or other identification, sovereigns may show documents that at first might look legitimate, but after a closer inspection are obviously fake. The fake driver's license could have the words, without prejudice, UCC 1-207, a reference to the Uniform Commercial Code. What might look like a real Social Security card to you may actually read, Social Security, Socialism in America, still 100% voluntary, for global domination and slavery, not for identification. Sovereigns often will have unusual responses to routine questions about their identification or license plate. If the officer asks the person's name, a sovereign may respond, I am a free man, traveling upon the land, or what authority do you have to question a sovereign? If asked for a driver's license, the person might say, is one required of a sovereign? Or they might ask you for your delegation of authority. If you continue questioning them, they might say, officer, I do not believe I, nor this private vehicle, falls under your jurisdiction. And here is the proof. Then they might show you what appear to be legal documents. Jerry Kane handed West Memphis officers Brandon Powder and Bill Evans some odd-looking papers. Powder and Evans didn't recognize the documents or understand what they meant. Many sovereigns sign legal documents in red ink or with a thumbprint in red ink. The subject's name might be in all capital letters or have strange punctuations such as the first name, then a hyphen, then the middle name, followed by a colon and the last name. Sovereigns believe this type of capitalization and punctuation shows they are immune from government authority. Some sovereigns may record their encounters with police, possibly in an effort to intimidate the officers. They might warn the officer that they are recording the encounter and then say something like, I am reserving all of my common law rights. Some of these recordings showing the officers are then posted on the sovereign's websites. Now you have some knowledge on how sovereigns operate. Form a strategy within your department with your training section, your tactical section, and your commanders, and be prepared to implement that strategy when you encounter sovereigns. Have a procedure where you, your dispatchers, and your colleagues all understand that you're dealing with a sovereign citizen, a person who doesn't believe that you have any authority over them. These tips are only a few of the signs of possible sovereign beliefs. Just recognizing one or two might mean that your workday will end like every other, and you'll get to go home to your family.
Hello? 1-1, where is your emergency? Exit 275 on 40. These guys just shot a police officer right on the exit. You said that officer's been shot on the 270 what?
Exit 275 on 40.
275 on 40. Where are you right now?
I'm at the exit. They're right in front of me, about 100 feet.
Okay, it's a white what?
That was white caravan, a white guy. Please hurry. He went, oh my God. Oh, shit. Two cops are dead. The other one's in a ditch. They're both dead now. They killed both cops. They shot one. He fell in the ditch. The other one ran behind the car, and they shot him in the head.
All right, where's the suspect now?
They just left in a white caravan. They went right up the exit. That guy had a automatic weapon. They're all with automatic weapons.
Where are you at now?
I'm standing right over the top.
What condom are you in?
Oh, I'm in a FedEx truck. You can't miss it. It's huge. Someone's got to come forward. He's coming.
A white unmarked possible unit that had shots fired, possibly a white van, was going to be the suspect. 6 to 10 if you've got more traffic, he's all right with me.
Jerry and Joe Kane were finally stopped for good after they killed my son and his partner that day, but not before two other courageous officers were injured. We, as law enforcement professionals, face danger every day. We know that's part of our job. Hopefully this video has given you some new tools to keep yourself safe. No officer should have to die like Brandon and Bill.
Okay. All right. You know, National Liberty Alliance, when we started out trying to learn things, we did get under a lot of the teachings of the sovereign citizen movement. And I don't even know you can call a sovereign citizen. Anybody that is, quote-unquote, a sovereign citizen won't even use the word citizen. They'll say that they're sovereigns, man on the land, and many other different things. But that's created, this is something that's created by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And so they created that, calling them sovereign citizens, and then they started to make lists of different groups. And some of the groups that they've listed, Sheriff Mack's group is on there as a sovereign citizen movement. The Oath Keepers are on there. Many, many, many different groups. You know, it's very strange, even though we've had, some problems with Southern's poverty. They used to come and into our rooms, when we're having meetings, and cause problems and send letters and different things. But we never responded too much to them. But they don't have us listed. We are not listed as a sovereign citizen group. And maybe sometime in the near future, because we're going to be doing some things here on this issue. Maybe sometime in the future we'll get into the details on why we think we're not listed. But nevertheless, the question becomes, they've taken words, sovereign citizen, are you a sovereign citizen? Well, the answer to that, I would respond with what our founding fathers had to say, what the law has to say, what the United States Supreme Court has to say. They call us a sovereign, so I guess we're sovereign, aren't we? Are we citizens? Well, the word citizen is used 7 times in the Constitution. We're citizens. So if you put the two words together, yeah, that's what it is. But police officers, cops, government agencies, they all have been taught that sovereign citizens are potential cop killers. So I'd like to warn everybody that's playing the sovereign citizen movement type thing. And again, I don't even like to call it that because they don't. It's just a mixed bag of a lot of things. People are just concerned with their, with what's going on with their government and the problems that they see and the liberties that they have lost. Now, there are some radicals, and that's in any group, no matter what. You'll get sociopaths, you get psychopaths, and they are, they are driven to come to these kind of things and other things. Just about every organization you can get, okay, you will always come into contact with people who are sociopaths or psychopaths. And we have to be able to identify them and neutralize them in the best way we can. We here at National Liberty Alliance, people can do whatever they please. They can speak as ever, whatever they want and do anything they want. They can exercise some of these things, the man on the land part of the program coming in and, making claims on liens and cease and desist papers and letters of marque. When he said letters of marque, he meant letters of marque. Letters of marque, they can play around with their license plates, they can create their own ID cards, they can call themselves American nationals. All that stuff is a flag. That's what it is. and it's not going to get you anywhere. You know, we at National Liberty Alliance are teaching the way to come into the courts and deal with the fraud as it is on its face. You know, we've had people who have come into National Liberty Alliance and tried to talk to us and convince us to go with this sovereign movement and to use certain language and thumbprints and red ink and all these other things. And we have not complied to that because we've come to realize all that does is mark us as something that is dangerous, something that can put us into a bad situation. We have better ways to deal with this. They'll come in and they'll say, well, you're going into their court. You're playing into their sandbox, okay? But the fact of the matter is that's our court. We're going into our court and taking our court back. We are laying out the law as is in the law, in the common law, in statutes and regulations. We use equity as much as we use law. Equity is to be used concerning anybody working for government agencies or involved in commercial activity. So that's where it applies. Commercial traffic law, that has to do with those people. It has nothing to do with us, okay? People who are involved in certain commercial activities. But the truth of the matter is that when you start to do the studies, and I'm not saying they're wrong, because, you know, like I said, Gerard and I were involved with this before we even created National Liberty Alliance, and we were involved in looking at these things back in the Ron Paul movement. So we looked at a lot of this stuff, and I could tell you a lot of the things they say is true, okay? The conspiracy layout is true, okay, how they started this, going all the way back, and goes even further back than this, but 1871 Organic Act is where the real construction of law started to destroy our republic. Of course, it was going on before that, but at that point, that's when they gained access and control of our legislators on the federal level, 1871. And as time goes on, and there was a series of things, all kinds of things that happened, and it's all been, all this law or equity or civil law, shall I call it, has been constructed upon that as the main part or the body of work, which is the Organic Act. Up until the point of 1934, Rules Enabling Act, which was executed and put in play in 1938, which created civil law and abrogated the common law. And if you talk to any lawyer, almost all of them will tell you we're under Roman law. They have no clue on the law. They have no clue even what Roman law means. But it's civil law, and that's ultimately what the United States Supreme Court calls it. So we need to battle the problem in the courts. We need to battle the problem using common law, using United States Supreme Court decisions. Using the law, period, and that's the best way to deal with the problem. Now, again, all these things are true with a lot of the things they say, but it is them that are playing in the sandbox, not us, because all these ideas are coming up with these cards, becoming nationalist, and using certain codes and making certain statements. That's all playing into what they have written on escape clauses, if you might, so to speak. They weren't written in so people could escape. I think it was written in with some good intentions in order to get a balance of what was being written that was by the enemy, and some people in Congress were trying to get some language in there in contradiction to it. And I think maybe that's where a lot of that comes from. But nevertheless, it's a construction of law created by them. And if you play in that game and you do that language, then you're inside their system. You are in their sandbox. And if you think you're going to walk into a court of law or any court, which you're not going to find a court of law unless you know how to open a court of law and pursue it and require it to be adhered to and make that jurisdiction the court that you're in, if you can't do that and you go into their courts with their language using this stuff, man on the land, refusing to pass the bar, I mean, all these different things that they've gotten laid out for that, again, they found this stuff in the legislation. They think it's, to escape the process. So if you think you're going to go into a court, make some quotes of certain things, click your heels, and be transported into a court of justice, I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you, because it's not going to happen. If a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. We have to understand who we are as a people. We have to understand our heritage. We have to understand our liberty. We have to understand our founding documents. We have to understand how to have government by consent. And that's what we do here at National Liberty Alliance, is teach people how government by consent, teach people how to challenge a jurisdiction that has no business to try to apply its power and authority over you, and to transport yourself ultimately into a court of law where you can get justice and reverse the whole thing against them. Because remember, these are our courts. It's not theirs. We paid for the construction of those buildings. We pay for the all of the equipment and machines and phones and desks and all of the office equipment that's in there. We pay for the people to man it. We pay for the salaries. We pay for the elected individuals, the appointed individuals. We pay for all of that. Okay? It is our court. And all we need to do is bring it back to where it belongs, where our founding fathers had positioned it and placed it for us to have. But we have lost it. Now, I'm going to post a video, and I'll announce the video next week and tell you where it's at. It's too long to play on a Monday night program. I think it's an hour long, and I don't want to take up that much time. And like I said, I was too sick to my stomach to watch any further. I didn't need to watch any further than 20 minutes. I just couldn't take it no more on how stupid, how uneducated, how damaged our children are. Our college-educated children are not college-educated. They are lost. They don't even know where the United States is on a map. They don't know who the first president of the United States is. They don't know what the Bill of Rights is. They don't know anything, anything. And it's very depressing. And what we just saw tonight is very damaging. And I'm telling you, anybody playing in that game, you're going to get hurt. But you're free to do whatever you please. Just don't bring it into National Liberty Alliance. I don't mind answering questions and discussing the matter here on Monday night program. I don't have a problem with that. But we used to have a lot of meetings going on within the states, and we had three states that went rogue on us, started teaching that stuff under the name of National Liberty Alliance, and we had to shut it down, and we did. And we had numerous people try to come in here to take over to push us into that kind of a situation or a problem. And therefore, you can find that information under our welcome tab, and you click on disclaimers. And you can read some of the information and some of the problems we had and the disclaimers we wrote and what we did about it and what we had to do about it. Some of it is very, very, you know, again, we have tried every way we can to keep that from becoming part of who we are as a people. We are the people. We are the lawmakers. We ordained, we established this Constitution for them. We're the author of the Constitution. We're above the Constitution. They are underneath it, and they must be obedient. And it's not a contract. It's not an agreement. It's not something. It is a command. It's an establishment, and it's what we ordained. And the federal government was not there to debate and argue and make it a contract. It's not a contract. Okay, it's the law of the land, as it says within it. This is the law of the land. But anyway, you can read these different disclaimers that we've written as we've had problems over the years. Just to read the first paragraph, because I think it really lays out exactly what we're saying, okay? This is a disclaimer. We are not part of the sovereign citizen movement. We do not endorse or entertain the fiction, such as bills of exchange, redeeming and or discharging through trust accounts, nor do we involve ourselves with contracts, commercial liens, and the exchanging of an oath of office for value. We do not encourage or teach the people to write declarations, drive without driver's license, revoke their voter's application, revoke their birth certificate, or their social security numbers. We do not support self-appointed judges and international courts. The power of the grand jury is to write true bills of indictment, true bills of presentments, true bills of information, and then file them with an Article III court and other constitutional courts. National Liberty Alliance was founded on Christian principles. Through much research, we discovered that, in fact, most of our founding fathers were pious, godly men practicing the principles of the Bible. We also discovered that common law was established about 1450 B.C. by God himself and blessed ancient Israel, interpreted in the Bible as the Son of God, Exodus 4:22-23, with his law. As William Penn put it, men must be governed by God, or they will be ruled by tyrants. It was Thomas Jefferson who rediscovered the roots of common law and a government ruled by God through God's people. From that discovery, we have the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution in the United States of America, and the Bill of Rights, which are common law documents. Our founders were in one accord on this issue, and it was upon this foundation that America was built. And I'm not going to read anymore. There's a couple more paragraphs here, and there's a disclaimer, people can go look. But anybody who has been coming to our Monday night meetings and paying attention and reading our works, they know that we do not involve ourselves with that citizen, what they claim to be or call the sovereign citizens. Now, I do think that some of this is the reason why we don't get as many volunteers working diligently as we'd like to. I think a lot of people are afraid. But I'll tell you, I truly believe, first of all, if we're doing the right thing and we work to do what we have to do under the Bible, under the Word of God, under that which is just and right, and take these issues into a court of law, and put a good argument up there on our position and what we know to be true. Okay, we're on safe grounds to begin with. And that's why, this is the main reason I think NLA is not listed. There are hundreds and hundreds of people. You can go to their site. Just Google Southern Poverty Law Center. Just Google that, or SPLC. Just Google it, and you will find their website. Go to their website. And they'll give you a list of all the terrorists, quote-unquote, all of the, the sovereign citizen groups. They also call it patriot movements. Yeah, we're patriot, and there is kind of a movement going on. Look, they're calling anybody who follows Trump and supports Trump as a patriot movement, and that they're dangerous to their democracy. And the truth of the matter is they're absolutely right. They are a danger to their democracy, because that's a their democracy. We are not a democracy. We are a republic. And we are the only natural law republic in the world. There is only one. And that's where the light of the world goes out to the world, and that's the United States of America. But that light is flickering. That light is about ready to go out. And only we, the people, can bring that light back and shine it hard. And that's when we start to exercise government by consent, which is what we have. It is the foundation of our law and the Declaration of Independence that we have government by the consent of the people. But the people do not know how to have government by consent, and that therein is the purpose of National Liberty Alliance. That therein is the subject of the book that I wrote, Government by Consent. And the access into the courts and the way to approach it and the right proper mindset to have to go into that court is not the man on the land stuff, but it is the law of the land. And you go into the, you go get the book, the Common Law, Court Access and the Common Law, which is a book that came out after Government by Consent, and it teaches people how to go into the courts and get justice. Now, it is difficult, and we need to talk more about that, and that'll be another time, but how to get to make sure that you get a court of law and that how you can require them to give you that court of law. I think we kind of found, if you want to call it, the secret to that, and we'll be discussing that more as time goes on. We've already laid some of that out, and it is pretty simple, but we're not going to talk about that tonight. So with that, I guess that's pretty much it. Again, I want to warn everybody to be very careful on what they say. And there is absolutely no reason. I'd like to hear anybody give me a reason why you want to give any police officer a hard time. They have no clue what you're talking about. They have no power or authority to change what they are taught and required to do as a job. As wrong as it might be, they can't do nothing about that. They're stuck, like you're stuck with your birth certificate, you're stuck with your Social Security card, you're stuck with your driver's license. They, too, are stuck in this whole bunch of all this craziness. So that's not where the argument is made. The argument is made in a court of law, using the law of the land to correct that court and to challenge that jurisdiction and to save yourself from that jurisdiction to be transported out. Or you take it into the federal court for cause for denial of due process, which we teach. But we do it in the law. We don't write papers to be, to do anything crazy or anything. And again, we go into a court of law to deal with this. We open a court of record, and they cannot meet our challenge. They cannot debate our words. And usually, what they do is they throw you out or shut you down. But we have found ways around that recently. So that we're going to discuss more as time goes on. And that's one of the reasons why, that and devolution is one of the reasons, two of the reasons why we believe it's time to move forward in the court case that we've opened back in 2016 against, or maybe it's 2015, I think it was 2016, against the United States judiciary, the federal judiciary and the United States Supreme Court. That's what our court case is about. It's against them. They have not been obeying the law. They have hidden courts of law, and they've transported us into courts of unknown courts, unknown jurisdictions. All right, anyway, with that, I'm going to end that. I know I've gone on a long time tonight, but this is an important issue, and I wanted to cover it. This will be posted up on our website, on this page on our website, on the Monday Night Recall call-in, and also on Rumble, so people can go re-listen to it again, or you can share with other people. But we do have to get active. We got to get people involved. If we're going to save this nation, if we're going to bring this republic back up in its full glory, it requires the people to do that on a grassroots level. And they need to do it without a national leadership telling you what to do. Again, National Liberty Alliance is here to facilitate an education, organization, communications between all those organizations, and to just be here to advise them in any way we can. But it's up to the people in the county to come together to decide the things they need to do and how they want to approach it. But again, there is a process laid out in common law. Our founding fathers used it. We're doing the very same thing they did. We are forming committees of safety for the sole purpose to bring our republic back to its full glory again. Because that's how our founding fathers secured this nation. That's how they created this nation. Paul Revere was part of the committee of safety was a committee of correspondence for the committee of safety. Every single one of our founding fathers was a member of the Committee of Safety. Everything they did to create us was created by committees of safety. The United States became who we are, and our heritage was laid out by the people in the committees of safety that gave their lives and their fortunes in order to bring and give it to us, we the people, to their heritage, to their posterity. We are their posterity. All right, anyway, we're going to go now to an open forum. Gerard, you want to pick up and start on that, and I'll kind of pipe in with you on these things? If you're here, I think, yeah, you're here.
As soon as I unmute myself.
Okay. All right, make sure you've hit the right buttons. Don't hit end Q&A, because I make that mistake from time to time, too.
Kind of hit the right button.
Okay. Yeah, down on the bottom right side, you should see Q&A queue or the attendees. Click on the Q&A queue and you'll see who's in the queue. You know all this anyway. We're not going to be off point tonight. If anybody has any questions, it's going to take us away from the point for tonight. We only have a half hour, but we want to stay on point. So please have your questions and your comments and your thoughts focused in on the subject matter for tonight. Anything else we'll discuss next week. But you ready to take the first question?
Candy from Michigan. Go ahead, you're unmuted. Hello, Candy. Michigan, 517. I don't hear anything. Can you hear anything?
No, 517-213. You got the mic, Candy from Michigan.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Hi, first, I want to say that I am I done your jury administrator course. I wanted to tell people listening that it's super, super important to go through the education on the National Liberty Alliance site, because as knowledgeable as a lot of people is here, they can't teach you in 10 minutes what you need to know to defend yourself. And a really important part is reading the constitutions, because it says right in the U.S. Constitution, and I'm in Michigan, it also says it in the Michigan Constitution, the people are under common law.
That's a point that's been lost, but go ahead.
Right, and that's why it's so important to do your for the people that are here to go through your education. Because I've in the past meetings I've seen people come on here and ask questions. Well, you can get one question answered. You're still not going to know what to do if you're sitting in court and you haven't done the education. So that's really super important. But I wanted to tell a little story, and I promise not to take too long. So I'm a nurse, and I lost my job last September. It was a very hostile work environment because it seemed like I was the only one in the place actually doing actual research and, you know, citing documents and whatnot. And they even wrote me up for it. And I told them, they said I couldn't give my opinion. And I said, you know, it's having an opinion and documented facts are two different things. But in any case, so I got on unemployment. And they approved it. And I didn't get any of the extra COVID stimulus or anything like that. I just got a minimum amount of unemployment for 20 weeks. Well, so that lasted from September until about February. About 4 months after that, they send me the unemployment agency sent me a letter saying they were going to re-review it, and they were threatening me that I might have to pay 1.5 time, back what I had gotten if they find. So I wrote them back, and I said, because the letter that they sent me was not signed, it was just a piece of paper from their agency. So the first thing I told them that any further court, I cannot proceed without knowing all the details of your offer, because anything they send is an offer. So I also told them I am unable to communicate with inanimate objects like pieces of paper or fictitious entities like corporations, departments, cartoon characters, or the like. So any further correspondence needs to include the name and contact information of the person that I'm going to be talking to, communicating with. And I also informed them that I do not perform services or requests for labor to do tasks or whatever for free. So if they're going to request that I do something, they should know that my fee is 10 1-ounce silver monetized rounds of 99.9% grade higher for every 15 minutes, starting on the first minute of every 15-minute increment. And if they violated my rights, then I would be determining the remedy. And if they didn't like my remedy fees or my services fees, then they shouldn't ask me to do something or violate my rights. But I always send everything that I send, I always send it, and even if it's just a letter, I send it in the form of affidavit, because the unrebutted affidavit is fact in court. So if I ever have to go to court, there I have it.
Well, let me suggest something. Anytime you have to deal with a government agency, particularly or anyone of authority, the best thing to do, if they've sent you a letter, you never, as a matter of fact, if any government agency, the IRS or anybody, sends you a letter or something, you must return, because otherwise what they do is they keep sending you the letters, and then they go after you and say that you acquiesced and therefore this, that, and the other thing, and they come at you.
Exactly.
Process called in rem. So you must answer every letter. And if you go through it very carefully and do a little research and, of course, studied what we're teaching here, you'll discover a way to be able to respond back to these people, but always respond back in an affidavit. Whenever I talk to any of these people, I put one statement down on the bottom. It's an affidavit, and I get it signed before a notary and send it to them, particularly the IRS. But before you get into anything that you're going to give them a charge for anything, then you want to get to the point where you've gone back and forth enough times, and you get to the point and you give them a notice and demand. Okay, and the notice of demand has 8 points. We teach it in the book. You'll find it on the website. There are others that teach it. And so it's 8 points that you have to cover. And at that point, then you can lay out what your expectations is, what your restitution is, and what your charges should be should A, B, and C happen. But again, we have to be very careful not to use the language that they teach you in order to, you know, deal with it as a sovereign citizen. That's sort of.
Oh yeah, I'm not. When I was telling somebody something, they said, "Oh, you're one of those sovereign citizens."
Yeah.
I said, "I don't feel the need to categorize myself to anybody. I'm not a sovereign citizen."
Well,
I just happened to read the Constitution, and I know what my unalienable rights are.
That phrase on its face, according to the people who are doing what they're claiming, they're calling them sovereign citizens. They don't call themselves sovereign citizens. To them, that's an oxymoron because they don't believe they're citizens to begin with. Okay, I know that I am a citizen, and I'm a citizen of the United States ultimately, which means I can go to any state, but I'm a citizen of New York. And there's nothing wrong with that word when you go back to the original meaning and the purpose that our founding fathers gave it. Okay, remember, we're under natural law. That's the key.
Right.
And
exactly.
So we do want to be careful not to use any of the language that the people are in that are categorized as sovereign citizens use or some of their procedures. We don't want to use those procedures. Not that we can't learn from them. You know, there are good people out there that give, seminars or whatever it is that you want to call them. They get up there and they talk about the things and they talk about the fraud and they lay the thing out how they did. Look, all that is right. I mean, I haven't found, what's that guy's name, Straight, for instance? I mean, he lays it out perfectly, okay? And the problem, though, is the process he uses to deal with the problem. That's where we disagree. And I strongly suggest that nobody use that process, because I'm going to tell you, if you're going to get hurt at some point, or you potentially can get hurt at that point. So, but you want
to. Yeah, I'm not trying to do any of that. I am like totally on board with what I've learned through National Liberty Alliance. I did all the courses, and I agree with the disclaimers and all of that. I'm not like a sovereign citizen. I'm not trying to get away with anything.
I just wanted to make the point, though, because, one of the key things, whatever you've done or whatever anybody else has to do, ultimately is communicating with them by letter, returning an answer to their letter, and asking questions. They'll never answer your questions. You see, now you're getting them to acquiesce. Ultimately, you know, if they're not going to communicate with you the problem and the situation in detail as you ask and request, or you don't understand something that they don't explain it to you, well, all that is evidence in the court should you end up in court. And again, you know, there's other things we can do. We'll be talking more about that as time goes on.
Well, and I also wanted to tell you, I am back to work, but I work 3 12-hour shifts, so I do have probably a day here or there a week, one or two days a week, to be able to help you do other things as well.
Well, anybody who wants to volunteer their help, and we've got lots of things you can choose from, and maybe you can discover things that we haven't even thought about and suggest it and help us in certain areas, you know, just send us an email to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org. Give us your name and your phone number, and tell us that you're interested in helping on the national level, and then someone will call you, and we'll talk about it. But with that, we need to move on to the next person because we don't have that much time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, we got like 15 minutes left. I'm going to open up Chantilly Bay from California. What's your name? I know where you're in California, so.
As well. I didn't know what the actual subject was. I did see the videos, but I did have a general question. I have two, so let me know which one qualifies. So there is a new article where the Pope says that his entities pull their money out of the bank and send it to his designated bank because they're by September 30th, the banks are going to they're going to do something. So I guess, you know, by then, if you look in your account and if your money is missing, that's why. So can you comment on that, or should I ask another question?
Well, listen, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And I don't necessarily believe that what the Pope says is going to go, because I think that whole system is going to fall down. I think the fiat dollar is going to fall down, and they're going to, and it's not going to be the Pope or the Queen or anybody dictating anything anymore. So I don't think you need to worry about that. Those are things that are already taken care of above our heads, and I have faith that they're going to, you know, restore the dollar and restore our country. It's going to take some time and maybe some chaos. And look at it.
I think it might happen a lot quicker than we realize. Like,
yeah,
everything's all set at this point.
I don't think you've got to worry about anything they say or do with the money. I think it's going to – I mean, I wouldn't leave my money in the bank if I had money. I don't have any money in the bank, so I don't care. You know what I mean? But yeah. If I had a substantial amount of money, I would definitely not need it in, because we already know what they do. In Greece, they called it a bail-in. They went in and took half everybody's money. And they said, well, you know, when you put money in our bank, you're our partner, so we lost a lot of money, so now you're going to lose money.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that's out and out bank robbery, if you ask me. But, you know, what are you going to do when it's your government saying that?
Right.
Now, let me make some strong suggestions here for anybody who's concerned about money and money in the bank and what they need to do. Maybe they can't afford to buy gold and silver. You know, I've always been buying silver, but I stopped buying silver. I don't even buy that anymore, because I come to realize that the United States coin is guaranteed face value at whatever time and value it is at the time. So when this collapse comes, the U.S. coin must still be a dollar, a real dollar, a true dollar. And what people need to understand, and I wrote a paper on this going all the way back to our founding fathers' time, you know, the dollar is worth literally 2 cents. And if you think about that, anybody that was born in the 40s and 50s and maybe even the early 60s, you know, you go buy a candy bar for a nickel. I mean, you're paying right now $2 for some of these candy bars. You go into a gas station and stuff, you pay $2. That tells you the value of a dollar. But you can relay the dollar up against gold and see what the dollar is worth. And the dollar is worth about 2 cents. Maybe it's worth 2.5 cents. If gold is going for, let's say, $1,900 an ounce, so let's just make it even $2,000 an ounce, which we know it's a little less, but inflation is going to take it higher. But if gold is worth $2,000 for an ounce of gold, then that means your dollar is worth literally 2 cents. It takes 20 silver dollars to make one gold. 1 ounce of gold, and that's the way it was before the inflationary process started, which started with the bank. Okay, so if you want to really save money, I would save in coins. You go to the bank and get boxes of coins. You can get boxes of nickels. There's $100 worth of nickels. It's 50 rolls for $100 in a box, and that's a lot of money. Okay, I've saved in nickels. And then I save, and I was saving nickels mostly because the metal value hasn't changed in 200 years. You know, nickel, I don't think it's been around 200 years, but close to it anyway. Or maybe it was been around 200, but it hasn't changed its value. It's metal value. It still has nickel and copper, same amount as it did before the bank started, the Federal Reserve, that is. But I get half dollars. Now, half dollars, a box of halves costs $500 in a bank. That box of halves, In a collapsed economy, when they have to honor, you know, the dollar is not a dollar. It's a note. It's a Federal Reserve note. It's not a U.S. dollar. It's not backed by the Treasury, the real Treasury. Okay,
correct.
But the coins are. The coins are. They are. You know, unless the literal government itself goes bankrupt, which that's not going to happen. But if that was to happen, then of course the coins fail also. But they're not going to fail. So the point I'm saying is this. And think about this. Remember, a dollar is about, let's say, 2 cents. Maybe it's 2.5 cents. You can work the math out yourself if you want for less. But 2 cents, if it's worth 2 cents, that means a $500 of halves, which has gold, which has copper and nickel in it. And you'll get some silver in there anyway. Every time you buy a box, you'll get some silver dollars in there. But in any event, that $500 is $25,000 worth of goods in today's market which means that $500 has $2,500 worth of value of today's market in a reset market. So that's important to understand. If you're going to keep cash, I strongly suggest, and you can't afford gold and silver, save coins. You go to the bank and get them. Now, a lot of banks won't give them to just anybody for anything. You know, if you have a business, I happen to have some businesses, so I can go in there and get coins. It'll give me a hard time. But even without a business, often they don't give you a hard time. So, you know, they'll get it. I just go in and ask for a box of halves, and they order it, and the following week I pick it up, and that's it. So that's a way to go. Anyway, we got to go on to that. Do you have another question real quick?
I'll save it for the call.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get more time next week in an open forum and for this week. Go ahead, Gerard. Next caller, I guess.
Let's hear from John Evans from Utah. Are you there? Hello, John. Unmute yourself.
Yeah, I can't get to him to unmute him.
There we go. I got it.
Okay.
Go ahead and skip me because I'm going to take us way off topic. I was just going to give an update, so I'll save that for a meeting throughout the week or whatever.
So we should get together this week and talk about things to see where we're at.
Yeah, just go to the next person that's got a valid right. question. I'm good.
Right, give me a call when you got time, John, this week.
Okay.
Thank
all
you.
Right. You bet.
Okay. Tizoc, we haven't heard from you in a while. Are you there? You've been unmuted.
Hey, guys. How's it going? A couple of comments that I believe are on point. One was about the Southern Poverty Law Center and what I think might be fairly described as a hit piece on the Jerry Kane incident that we just shared in the Monday night meeting with some video footage.
Yeah.
So I have a good friend who actually did some investigative journalism on that incident.
Oh, no
his
kidding.
His name is Mark Jungwirth.
Yeah.
Jungwirth is spelled J-U-N-G-W-I-R-T-H. He still has a pretty old YouTube channel up, which has several investigative pieces on this dash cam footage. That YouTube channel is We Are Change Oshkosh. He used to be a chapter head for We Are Change maybe about 10 years ago, and these videos are from 12 years ago, but I definitely recommend that people go there. He spoke with...
Spell his name again, J-U-N-G what?
W-I-R-T-H, first name Mark. I did a search on YouTube, which over the years when I've searched for his channel, I think YouTube shadow bans it,
yeah.
But it's called We Are Change Oshkosh, and he... You know, he's kind of one of those truthers who does a lot of investigative stuff on other truthers. And anyway, so
hey, thank you.
He's still in that area, but I definitely recommend people check that out. I understand that Jerry Kane was going across the country giving lectures on how people could get out of their fraudulent mortgages when they were under foreclosure. So, you know, of course, the speculation was that, you know, he was murdered because of this. One little twist in this story, which I don't think he ever shared with his content, was that, you know, when he was interviewing the wife slash mother of the deceased father son, that according to her, she didn't even think that that was her husband in the videos. Other things you might notice in some of his videos on his YouTube channel is that these dash cam videos, I believe they didn't come out for over 40 days, while typically they're supposed to be like 48 hours, and then when they did come out, Mark was able to dissect them pretty well and show that there was some obvious video editing. And I think, you know, I'm kind of looking at the page now, and in the first image that comes up, there's like this half torso on the road. And if I recall, when the camera, you know, pans initially, you see this torso on the road, or this body, I should say. And then when it pans away and back, there's only the legs, and there's, like, no torso, no blood. It's just, you know, perfectly clean image of, you know, half a body. But anyway, The other thing was about the Southern Poverty Law Center, and maybe I could use a little help from the group on this, but I believe that they have ties or they may parallel with the Anti-Defamation League, and as another resource for the origins or nature of such an organization, I would direct you to perhaps a much more shadow banned.
They're both communist organizations.
Well, I think we can go far deeper than that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure we can, yeah.
Well, and that's what I want to share with you. And this would be from the hourofthetime.com website /transcripts, that's plural, .html. Again, hourofthetime.com /transcripts, .html. And that'll take you to some transcripts of William Cooper's radio broadcast from the 90s. And in it, it looks
they killed Cooper, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yes, he was also killed by sheriffs.
Yeah.
So now this particular site will have 8 transcripts that are linked ADL Exposé Part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And in them, he's reading from, at least initially, and I should have this more together, let's see, narrative special report of the Executive Intelligence Review entitled The Ugly Truth About the ADL. So over this, you know, let's say 8 hours of radio broadcast, he goes in depth pretty quickly tying the ADL to B'nai B'rith, to the assassination of Lincoln, and as an Illuminati organization. So I think we with NLA can appreciate some of maybe the socialist communist kind of influences or the powers behind these veils, these political machinations. So, I mean, my background's more of a William Cooper background, right, in terms of the mystery schools kind of pulling the strings from, you know, behind the scenes. But yes, in terms of you wanted to get like a deep, deep down rabbit holes to the point where you might get exhausted, and this is like super verified many times, I recommend this website, ADL Exposé, HOTT transcript, Hour of the Time. Those are the two comments I had, and thank you very much, Mr. Darish and Gerard.
Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. We're almost out of time. I'm going
to... Yeah, just a real quick point, though. You know, people need to really go and take a bare minimum our civics course and our study. You can find that under Education Starts Here, and you come to the courses. We have a foundation study. Really powerful. There's no questions to that. It's really just a study to go through numerous videos that'll really, really give you a great understanding of what's going on and what we can do. And then the civics course is really super powerful, and it'll tell you in that civics course we have history lessons and we have constitutional lessons, but we also have a series of documentaries done by Griffin. And he lays out when we go through all those different documentations that they were doing, documentaries. He lays out very clearly on how we got to where we're at. Go ahead, Gerard. Back to you.
Yeah. Look, there's so much out there, and you know, you use the word Illuminati. They look at that like that's crazy. But you know, all this stuff is now becoming more mainstream. So they're not going to get away with their propaganda that like they're used to. People are waking up. I mean, they did a hell of a hit piece on us, you know, that's still online, and we got to go after them for that, where they basically say we're terrorists, and we do this, and we do that, and we do that, and it's all lies. We don't do any of that. And they studied us better than we study ourselves. They took some of the factions that broke off, And they said it was us. I mean, we did have a guy that ended up in jail that used to be part of us, but we kicked him out. Before that, he wasn't a bad guy, but he was off doing stuff that we warned him not to do, and he did it anyway. And you know, he was a jury foreman, and actually everything he wanted to do was proper, but you know, they got him for, you know, interfering with a court and running a fake operation and blah blah blah. They really set him up, you know. And the poor guy, I think he died in jail, didn't he, John, that Terry?
He passed in jail, and we tried to help him, but they had some other people that came into the group. It was an NLA group, and they came into it. They sabotaged it and took a whole group of people in a different direction, and we had to disconnect from all of them.
Yeah.
And this happened in three states. What was the other state? Jan, do you remember the names of the states we had problems with? One of them,
Colorado.
Colorado was one, yep. Anyway, we had to disconnect from these groups. And look, if people could do, think, say whatever they want, but we don't want them to take it into our, when we work very hard to teach people and bring people into an understanding and a knowledge of their heritage and how to have government by consent, and then they come in and just take over the group and start teaching all this craziness. And in my opinion, these people are sociopaths or psychopaths. All right, back to you, Gerard.
That's all I got. I'm done if you're done.
All right, do you want to try to take one more before we close down?
I haven't heard from Ed from Arizona. I'm going to unmute him. I see what he's doing.
Yeah, maybe we could talk when John and I talk. We can come together with you too.
I was going to request a three-way.
Yep, absolutely.
That's all.
Okay.
Okay. Very good. Look at this after 11. I have a lot of people in there. I'm sorry, but John wouldn't shut up tonight. No.
Yeah, I'm sorry I took so much, but it was really important.
Yeah, you had to get it out.
Program tonight. We're on the record. We're on the record for a lot of things, but I think this brought everything together in a nice way.
Okay, so I'm going to say goodnight, and thank you, everybody, and see you here next week, same time, same channel, and who knows what. There's a lot of stuff going on, so keep your head, watch your six and keep your head on a swivel. And you're going to see things, I think, going down that you're not going to believe. So you're going to hear a lot of information coming out in the next couple of weeks. And we will discuss that, too, as it comes out. Okay.
Okay, Godspeed, everyone. And Lord willing, we will see you next week. Thank you much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Let me end the recording.
There you go.